Okay, good afternoon. Welcome back to the BRS Men's Afternoon Kollel. As always, it's great gratitude to Avi Frolich, the Frolich Financial Group, for your sponsorship. Thank you, Rabbi Shabtai. Thank you, all of you, for joining. And I'm not going to belabor it again this week, but if you've not yet contributed, brsonline.org/global. We're running our global campaign. Those who benefit from our shiurim and our articles and all the Torah that comes out of our community, we're asking you to partner to show appreciation for that benefit and enable us to continue to spread it. You can go on brsonline.org/global anytime and contribute and be part of this campaign. And we thank you in advance. Okay, we are continuing our series on halachic considerations in wills and estates and estate planning. And we are going to get to, I know we're on part five today, we've not yet gotten to how to construct a proper halachic will, not a proper living will, but a proper halachic will. But I assure you, we are going to get to it at some point. Do you see the source sheets in front of you? Those listening on Zoom, I know we also have people on Facebook, on YouTube, and I'm happy to share those source sheets with you. We've spoken about the notion of a halachic ethical will, leaving not only our assets and our material possessions, but leaving our values and our vision to the next generation. We talked about how to divide one's assets between staka and their children. We've then talked about what is the halachic mechanism. Does a husband inherit the wife? The wife doesn't inherit the husband's principal money, but is supported from the estate. Similarly, sons inherit a father. The daughter does not inherit. She simply inherits a contribution towards her dowry to enable her to be able to get married. We've not yet gotten to the question of how to circumvent the system, but we've talked about the Torah system, the halachic system. The system includes, for example, the Bechor, the eldest son, being notel pishnayim, getting a double portion. But we spend time on the notion, the definition of a double portion is within that which is muchzuk, that which was outright owned, that which was potentially owned, a debt that was due. The eldest son does not get the double portion. They only get the double portion in the part of the assets that are realized, that are real, that are liquid, and that can be used to transact with. We then moved over to the question of if someone has a civil will, but they do not have a halachic will altogether. Is there a violation? Does dina de machuz a dina? Does the fact that there's a law of the land, does that supersede the halachic hierarchy? Or does the halachic hierarchy supersede? And we saw that the Rashba had a very vehement and adamant tshuva where he said that the halachic hierarchy supersedes dina de machusa, the law of the land. The Ramah codified that la halacha, that we do not apply dina de machusa dina to the questions of Yerusha, to the questions of inheritance. We then saw a groundbreaking radical opinion of Rav Moshe Feinstein, where Rav Moshe said that maybe that was true within halacha. Halacha can't imagine kinyan la'achar misa. Within the halachic mechanisms and instruments, we don't have any way to transact after death. At the moment a person expires, they no longer own. If you don't own, you can't transact. You cannot transfer ownership to someone else. However, the civil law of inheritance, ein kinyan gedul mizu, said Rav Moshe. There is no greater kinyan than the notion that the state will take your property and transfer it based on the estate laws, and therefore that can replace or supplant the notion of a kinyan. And therefore, said Rav Moshe, if there's a civil law and no civil will and no halachic will, that civil will be halachically binding because the state capacity to transfer ownership replaces the need for a kinyan, and therefore the normal limitation of a kinyan achra misa would not apply. The state's ability to transfer ownership will replace what is normally a deficiency or inability to have a kinyan, and that civil will in lieu of a halachic will be halachically binding. That was Rav Moshe's very radical opinion, rejected by most achronim, by his contemporaries and those who follow. It's codified here by Diane Grunfeld. Diane Grunfeld quoted others who rejected this insight of Rav Moshe. We then moved over to the question of, well, if a civil will is not binding because of dina de machusa dina, based on the Rashba and the Ramah, and most poskim reject Rav Moshe's Einfall, they reject Rav Moshe's very novel approach that it should be binding civilly, halachically, because the civil will provides the mechanism of transfer, then maybe you can say that the will of the deceased should be followed nonetheless, even if there is no halachic will, because we apply mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, that if somebody articulates where they want their assets to go on their deathbed, then we honor their will. Is that only on Shabbos when they can't write, or even during the weekday when they can write? We saw the sugya in Baba Basra, the Gemara in Baba Basra, but the Gemara in Gittin concluded, which is either a corollary of the same principle or a parallel principle, that mitzvah lekayim divrei hames. And we spoke about in a previous chabura, not part of the series, but you can find it online, so it's not part of the series of halachic considerations and wills and estates, but it was a shiur earlier in the afternoon kolal about this topic, about mitzvah lekayim divrei hames. Does that work through mitzvah? Is that a religious obligation to listen to the will of the deceased? Or does it work through kinyan? Is there a transfer of ownership, whether or not there's a religious component to it? So we saw that as a chakira, and we shared 7 or 8 nafkaminas in that previous year. We're not going to review that whole thing now, but we'll talk about it just in terms of its halachic implications for us. Tosfos, and this is where we left off. Tosfos in source 36 on page 13. For those who have the source sheets, if you'd like the source sheet, as always, I invite you to email me, and I'm happy to send you a copy of the source sheet. So Tosfos apply the principle of mitzvah lekayim divrei hames in a very limited fashion. In a case where there's a shlish, bedavar shehushlash mitchila lekach, biyat shlish dumya damashlish mos libito. Tosfos only apply the concept of mitzvah lekayim divrei hames, the obligation to listen to the will of the deceased, when those assets that we're talking about are in escrow with a third party. Now, how do you understand Tosfos? The simple understanding of Tosfos is that mitzvah lekayim divrei hames is a mitzvah, it's a religious obligation. The problem is that a religious obligation doesn't supersede a halachic mechanism of kinyan. At the moment that Reuven dies, his children inherit him, long before whatever it says his will and his interest, his divrei hames were. The children inherit automatically. Now to extract it from the rightful heir and give it to another party, even if it's the kayim divrei hames, to fulfill the will of the deceased, how could you do that? How could you extract it from what should be the rightful new owner, which is the inheritor of Reuven? So Tosfos, the way that Tosfos gets around that, Rabbeinu Tam gets around that, as Rabbeinu Tam says, we apply mitzvah lekayim divrei hames in the case of a shlish, in the case of a third party. Why? Because when the money was with a third party before Reuven died, when Reuven dies, his inheritors do not in fact inherit. And you're not extracting it from them in order to circumvent, to send it to the will of Reuven instead. By the fact that it was in the third party, it never arrived in the hands of whom halacha thought should be the inheritor. And that's why before it channels down to the inheritor, based on halacha, you can redirect it lekayim divrei hames. That is the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Shulchan Aruch HaChosh HaMishpat Simen Run Resh Nun, source 37, follows this opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Yeshom Delamina Mitzvah Kaim Divrei Hames El Hecha De'it Pasibiyad Shlish. That we only follow Mitzvah Kaim Divrei Hames. We only apply. Well, what do you mean there's no halachic will? But we know what the intent, we know the will, quite literally the will, we know the want and the desire of the deceased. Doesn't that count? Doesn't that matter? Rabbeinu Tam says it only matters, and the Shulchan Aruch codifies la halacha, the will, the interest, the directive of the deceased in absence of a halachic will only matters for money that was in the hands of a third party, and that's how we avoid the fact that we're taking it out of the hands of the rightful heir to give it to someone else, by preventing it from going to the rightful heir to begin with, by putting it in the hands of a third party. So the Shulchan Aruch rules according to Rabbeinu Tam, limiting the applicability of this principle of mitzvah lekayim divrei hames to a case of a shlish where it's in the hands of a third party. Many Rishonim disagree with Rabbeinu Tam, and again, the machlokes of Rabbeinu Tam and others is understood as, is this a din in kinyan or is this a din in mitzvah? That's how we understand it with many nafkaminas. You can listen to that previous year. And although many Rishonim disagree, the Shulchan Aruch, we pala like Paskin, like this Yesh Omrim, seems to embrace the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. The mitzvah lekayim divrei hames does not apply to post-death distribution of assets. If there's a secular will, unless it was in the hands of a third party beforehand. Unless it was in the hands of a third party beforehand. How do you define in the hands of the third party? The bank is not a third party. Your assets in the bank are under your ownership. That's not considered to be in the hands of a shlish. Some suggest, or Fivel Cohen told Rabbi Jachter, that money deposited in an IRA is considered in the hands of a shlish of a third party. So you'd apply mitzvah lekayim divrei hames. If someone says, I want you to give my IRA, not to my sons who halachically are the rightful heirs. I want you to give my IRA instead to the guy at the pizza store who was always friendly to me when my sons never ever called. So what do you mean? But your sons, according to the Torah, should get it. So if it's in the hands of a third party, we circumvent and we detour the money, so your sons never inherited upon your death, because it was already in the hands of the third party, that'll work for an IRA to be considered a shlish, a third party. It would not work for a bank account. Similarly, it would work for life insurance, maybe other retirement assets in the hands of a third party, maybe a pension, maybe life insurance that's going to be collected. Those are considered in the hands of a shlish, and you would apply the principle of mitzvah kaim divrei ha-meis, which Shulchan Aruch says you would not apply mitzvah kaim divrei ha-meis to other real assets in a bank, and therefore, in lieu of a civil will, you would apply the halachic hierarchy. Now the Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Etlinger, source 38, the Rav Altana, has the following fascinating tshuva. And the Binyan Sion says the following. The Binyan Sion, Rav Yaakov Etlinger. He says, the fact that the Shulchan Aruch accepts the ruling of Rabbeinu Tam, not everybody disagrees with the Rishonim, not everybody dismisses the Rishonim who disagree. So here was the question that was posed to Rabbi Yaakov Edlinger. Bari she'osa shtar tzava ba'arkos. A healthy person had a civil will in a secular court, secular law. V'tziva v'chasam be'edim she'ploni yikabal ze'o ploni ze'. And he instructed and signed with witnesses that the so-and-so would accept this part of his estate and others would accept the other assets. I don't know what that's a Yiddish or what language that is. German, I'm not sure what that means. So Reuven has a secular will. And in the secular will, which is signed by witnesses, he clearly establishes how he wants his assets divided, including his heirs, his halachic heirs, his children, but also including people whom he's not related to, who halacha would not recognize as heirs. Now, when it comes to his own children, they will accept their yerusha. He established an apotropos, a trustee, who after his death would go to the estate and divide the estate to give it to each of the people whom he has instructed. And the rightful heirs, the children, never complained, they never challenged. So why didn't the sons dispute the civil will that will include people who halachically are not rightful heirs? Is it because they were mochel? They forgave, they forewent. I don't know if that's a real word. They were happy to make their father happy. That's what he wanted. So they were mochel. They were mochel. Or maybe the reason they were silent is not because implicitly they were forgiving and implicitly they allowed the other ones to get it, is they knew the law and they knew they stood no chance of succeeding, and therefore rather than contest the will where they knew they stood no chance of succeeding, they simply were silent. So now the trustees do what they were asked to do, and they divide the assets among the sons as well as the non-family members. So the question came to the Binyan Sion of Yaakov Etlinger, the Rav of Altana, and the question was not from the children who were silent and the children who we have no access to, no connection with. The question came to one of the other non-relatives who were named in the will to be a recipient, a beneficiary of the will. And that individual is a Yerush Shemayim. And they came to the Rav of Altana, the Binyan Sion of Yaakov Etlinger, and they wanted to know, can I accept this allocation? Can I accept this amount of money? Maybe rightfully it should go to the children, and if I accept it, I'm stealing from them. And the fact that the children never contested, is that because implicitly they were forgiving, they wanted their father to be happy, and they were very happy for me to get this part? Or maybe they didn't contest it simply because they didn't think they would succeed in the secular court, and therefore I'm not taking it rightfully, I don't really deserve to own it. Were they doing something wrong by accepting and receiving something that was named in the will? That was the question. That was the question of the Shoel, of the questioner. Does halacha entitle him to keep what a secular will stipulates he should get with the silence of the halachic heirs, or must he go above and beyond and forgive it? May the beneficiary named and stipulated in the will, should he forgive it, making sure it goes in fact to the Yorshim, because halachically they are the rightful ones. So Rabbi Yaakov Etlinger replies, won't read the entire tshuva. You could read it in intricate inside, but he concludes on the next page. V'lachein. Well, let's start from here. Hayotze mizel adina. D'tolei anidon d'shelo v'anach shita l'shitas rabbein atam harishon ha'divinin mushlosh. Lo aminu mizem mitzlakaim divrei ha'meis. Av l'shitas rabbein atam ha'shni aminu mizem mitzlakaim divrei ha'meis. Rabbi Yaakov Endlinger develops that there are two opinions of Rabbein Atam. According to one, you only apply the obligation to adhere to the will of the deceased when it was in the hands of a third party, a shlish. According to the other opinion, that's not a required criteria. According to the Rivam and the Ramban, since the deceased went to the trouble of naming a trustee and charging the trustee with dispersing the money according to their will, that's the Divrei Ameis. That is clearly what they want. And we have a mitzvah to fulfill it. And whether we have a mitzvah to fulfill it, if it's not in the hands of the third party, is exactly this question. So skipping all the way down, if the Yorshim, if the rightful halachic heirs never protested, then we can assume that they want to fulfill the will of the deceased. According to most poskim, maybe you don't require the shlish, and therefore, even if they had received the money, you could take it from them, arguing that they have to observe the will of their father. So says Rav Yaakov Etlinger, you could keep the money. Why? Because the questioner is a muchzak. Here the court, the trustee, has dispersed it to the one who asked the question. So now the one who asked the question is the muchzak. They're the one holding the money. So we have a principle in halacha. We've given shir on this in the past with a wonderful chakira and nafkaminas. A principle called Hamotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya. Whoever's holding on to a possession is 9/10 of the law. Now his possession 9/10 of the law, the chakira we gave is Hamotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya, which is a svara. Is that because Hamotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya is a birur, we assume that that is the law, or is it a hachra'a? Is it what we simply practice, or do we assume that that's the actual halacha? Is it a hachra'a, or is it a birur? That is a machlokas and a chakira in Hamotzi Mechavero Alav Haraya. But however you understand it, what it means is whoever holds the money, the burden of proof is on the other one to extract it. The burden is on the other one to extract it. So the one who's holding the money is not necessarily the rightful owner. Really, the money is besuffic. There's a doubt. We're unsure, we're uncertain who really deserves the money. However, in order to extract it from the one holding it, the burden of proof is on the one who's trying to take it away. That's Hamotzi Mechaver Lavaraya. So says the Binyan Tzion, since the one named in the will is the muchzak, the trustee has dispersed and allocated that money rightfully to the one named in the will. They're considered to be the muchzak. The burden of proof falls on the children, on the heirs, on the sons to extract it. And since many Rishonim, including the Rosh and the Ramban, disagree with Rabbeinu Tam and claim that Mitzvah Kaim Devrei Ameis will apply even if it's not in the hands of a shlish, so the muchzak can claim he has the right to retain what he has according to the secular will. Why? Because of the principle of Mitzvah Kaim Devrei Ameis. And I, the rightful heir, the son, will say, but you only apply Mitzvah Kaim Divrei HaMeis when, what? When it's in the hands of a shlish, in the hands of a third party. But maybe the recipient, the beneficiary, will say, I disagree with Rabbeinu Tam. I paskin like the other Rishonim. I paskin like the ones who disagree. And therefore, based on this, the Binyan Tzion says, Mitzvah Kaim Divrei HaMeis might apply. He has the right to say he follows the other opinion of Shulchan Aruch and those who disagree with Rabbeinu Tam, and to say that Mitzvah Kaim Divrei HaMeis will even apply when it's not in the hands of a shlish, and therefore he can keep the money. Reb Chaim Eizer and Achiezer endorses the Binyan Tzion, but he does note that not everybody would agree with this. Not everybody agree with this opinion. However, there's another suggestion that you could add on to this, and that is the notion of kibrav ve'em. That kibrav might also contribute to this question. So, this question of a shlish, Rabbeinu Tam's limitation that the Shulchan Aruch seems to include, if you're trying to do it lechatchila, not in the case of a contested will, but what's the right thing to do, so how do you define a shlish? So some suggest, and again Rabbi Jachter quotes this in his articles about it, that mitzvah l'kayim devrei ha'meis will not sanction the use of a secular will alone. You can't rely on that, because normally it's not in the hands of a third party. However, if you have a revocable living trust, a contractual arrangement between a person as the grantor forming the trust and the person or another person, co-trustees, managing the trust, and then there are people, beneficiaries, who can benefit from the trust, that might have the status of a third party, a shlish, in which you would apply mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. So if in the will you're leaving a trust, not an ordinary trust, it might have to be a irrevocable trust, it's questionable whether a revocable trust would apply, that might have the status of a third party, the trust, in order to say that you'd apply mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. So even in the absence of a halachic will, there is a secular will, and the secular will reflects the divrei ha'meis, and is binding through the principle of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis. Maybe you would apply it, maybe you'd apply it. Other people disagree about a trust, and they say a trust is a part of your imagination. Halacha doesn't recognize the independence of a trust. If I have chametz owned by a trust in my name on Pesach, do I violate Bayira Bayimatzah? Can a trust own Basar B'chalav? What's the halacha of a trust? There are many applications of this. Rav Moshe talks about a store. Can a store operate on Shabbos because the owner incorporated the business and put it in an LLC, a limited liability corporation? So the ownership of the store on Shabbos is not owned in my name, it's owned in an LLC, a limited liability corporation. Rav Moshe said the halacha doesn't recognize corporations. There's no such thing as a corporation or a trust. The beneficiary of it, or the name of it, is the true owner of it. So, for example, Rav Moshe applies that within a store open on Shabbos. Shlomo Zalman applies that in the question of ribbis. You can't be exempt from the prohibition of lending with interest because an LLC lends someone interest rather than you. If you own the LLC and the benefit from the LLC, then really you're the one lending with interest. So Rav Moshe, Shlomo Zalman, others have tshuvas when it comes to Pesach, Chametz on Pesach, Bayiro, Bayimatzah. We don't recognize the halacha concept of a corporation or trust, and we also wouldn't recognize it here. If it's an irrevocable trust, so that might have a different status. That is not, you do not retain control of, not that I want to assert I fully understand it, I'm not entirely versed in it, but the irrevocable trust you don't have control of, and therefore it might actually meet the standard of being a shlish, a third party, sort of an escrow, which would circumvent taking it out of the hands of the children, enable you to make the lekayim divrei ha'meis, to apply the will of the divrei ha'meis of the deceased. So now we've seen that you need to have a halachic will. A civil will, according to many poskim, will be stealing from the halachic rightful heirs. Aye, maybe Rav Moshe has a big chiddush that the secular will should be followed because of dina d'machus adina. That was Rav Moshe's chiddush. Many or most disagree. What about mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis? No, because mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis will only be limited to the money that is in a shlish, the money that's in the hand of a third party, since that is very limited. In most cases, the civil will not supplant or supersede what the halacha will tell you have to do. What about the old-fashioned kibbut ave'im? Should you just follow kibbut ave'im? So there's a civil will, and the civil will does not follow the halachic hierarchy, but maybe the children should say, I'm mochel in the halachic hierarchy, because if that's what my father wanted, forget dina d'machus adina, and forget mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha'meis, but kibbut ave'im, the old-fashioned kibbut av of the aim, maybe for that reason. So Yaakov Kamenetsky in Tshuvas Emes LeYankov, source 39. He says, first of all, Bizman is Anachem Vayashal Hashachela Kogan Gamil Benosov. First of all, Yaakov endorses that it's proper today to leave a portion of the estate to one's daughters. Even though Halacha mandates the inheritance goes directly to the sons, Rav Yaakov says the proper thing today is to give to the daughters. Ve'im Bizem Mishim Mavir Achsan Asay, we'll see that. That would not violate circumventing the halachic hierarchy. Okay, we'll come back to exactly how you do that. And I know some are eager to get to that bottom line. It's part 5 already, after all. But we will get to that bottom line. You just have to stick with me. So now the reason I bring this Emes LeYankov. So says Rav Yaakov the following. Meis v'iniach ben echad u'shnei banos. A person dies with one son and two daughters. V'kasa b'tzavashe ischalek hakol b'shava and wants to divide all their assets equally. Eich yisnaheg ha-ben. The son comes to Rav Yaakov and asks him the following shayla. The son comes to Rav Yaakov and says, what's the proper thing to do? What's the proper thing to do? Comes the son and he says, he left a portion to me, but also to my sisters. Now, halacha dictates that it all comes to me, not to my sisters. They're not deserving of anything. But this was what my father wanted, and there's a mitzvah of kibbut av ha'eim, even la'achar moso, the nature of the mitzvah kibbeh av le'im after death is different than in life, another time. So says Rav Yaakov the following, Nira shemitzara din ein b'tzava ha-koach levatel din yerusha. It seems that from the perspective of the core halacha, in the will there is no ein koach levatel din yerusha. Secular civil will not supersede the halacha. V'gam ein kam ishim mitzvah l'shmor divrei ha-mesha, or ha-kesef shayach l'yorish. And if it's not in the hand of a shlifsh of a third party, you also do not apply the principle of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha-mesh. V'gam kibbeh av ein kan shorei kibbeh av hu rak mishal av. And even the obligation to honor the father is only at the expense of the father. Right? The Gemara and Kedushin, we learned this together in the afternoon kolos several years ago. But the obligation of kibbeh av is from the money and the assets of the father. The son doesn't have to dip into their own assets to pay for the father. So here you're asking me, in order to fulfill kibbeh av ein and to follow the secular will of the father, I have to forego what halacha says is coming to me. What if my father leaves $5 million? And now I've got to split that with my sisters. I'm standing to lose millions of dollars, but kibbeh av ein is mishal av, not mishal ben. I don't have to pay in order to fulfill kibbeh av. Says Rav Yaakov, listen carefully. Aval akoponim, yesh b'zeh mishum hidr b'mitzvah kibbeh av ein. Nevertheless, even though the strict halacha of kibbeh av ein would not apply, there is still an extra nice notion of honoring the father and mother. V'alpidin yachol asos mashiyirte. Really, you're allowed to do what you want? In a confrontation, a conflict between the secular will and the halacha, you can do what you want. How, and even kibbeh av, you're not obligated to lose money, to forfeit money for kibbeh av. However, says Rav Yaakov, you're asking me what's the menschlich thing to do? What's the right thing to do? Hidr mitzvah kibbeh av. V'rak mishum hidr anah yasa kvi tzava, o me'achelek shenosu nabonos, ena tzorch la'afish meiser, shereke me'achelek mechalek lemes kaspo. The money that you're sharing with your sisters, you don't have to deduct maisa for yourself, because really they're getting that money. So very fascinating. Rav Yaakov says, even though strictly speaking, if there's only a civil will and not a halachic will, the son is entitled to it over his sisters. Halachically. You don't apply mitzvah l'kayim divrei ha-mesa, it wasn't in the hands of a third party. You don't apply dina d'machus adino, we don't follow Rav Moshe. And nevertheless, it's the nice thing to do to listen to what your father wanted. That is, after all, the appropriate thing to do. Okay, very good. So mitzvah kaim divrei ha-mesa we don't apply. Good. Next topic. What about disinheriting? We're going to get to the answer. I know some of you are very eager. What about disinheriting? What is the halacha of taking someone out of your will? So, okay, let's skip to the My Burial Wishes before we get to that. So here on page 17 you have, I wrote this up, My Burial Wishes. The best thing to do is to stipulate what you want, not only in the area of your assets after death, but how you want to die. And I read this to you in one of the previous installments. The letter concerns matters of extreme importance to me. I trust you'll honor my last will and most fervently held wishes and desires. Kosher plain wood casket, no autopsy, cremation, or embalming. Buried underground, not in a mausoleum. No viewing of my remains after death. The Tara and Tachrichin should be taken care of by the Boker Ton Synagogue, Hever Kadisha. Shmira to be provided for at the funeral parlor. To my immediate family members, observe the laws of mourning. Kriya, Shiva, Kaddish, and so forth. And, you know, one assumes that their observant children are going to follow, but one can't assume anything today. And the more that you articulate, and the more that you're clear and transparent, the better off and the bigger favor that you're doing to your children. This is the language to add to a secular will for conformity. It is my intent, and we're going to go through the halachic mechanism of why this works and how this works. It is my intent that all transfers of property made under this will shall be in conformity with Orthodox Jewish law. Therefore, for the sole purpose of meeting this objective, I provide as follows. I hereby devise and bequeath the sum of $1,000 to my heirs, as defined in accordance with halacha, to be divided among them in strict accordance. Each and every distribution or other transfer of any property under this will, except for the bequest set forth in subsection 1, shall be deemed to be made by way of gift effective the instant prior to my death. Each such transfer by gift shall be deemed to have been completed through a proper kinyan as appropriate for each type of property and as defined by halacha. So the way to make it conform, this is the first way, we're going to get to a second way, but the way to make it conform is essentially to make the transfer before you die. Once one dies, your will is taken over by God's will. And God in Chumash, and codified by the Shulchan Aruch, has a hierarchy of how the money should be distributed. Once a person dies, if all there is a secular civil will, then halachically there's a hierarchy that determines how it should go. So what this does is, essentially, each transfer had been completed through a proper kinyan for each type of property as defined by halacha before a person dies. And here's how it works. Jewish religious law does not recognize the validity of a will. Except for unusual circumstances, one cannot arrange for his estate to be divided in a manner different from Torah. However, by creating a conditional obligation, one can achieve the same net result as that of a will and other government laws in a way which conforms to Jewish law. A person who writes a will should obligate himself to pay a sum of money greater than his total assets. It is stipulated that the obligation is retractable and is not payable until one moment before death. Therefore, the obligation has absolutely no effect during one's life. So again, you obligate to pay a sum of money greater than the total assets, and you obligate that debt should be incurred moments before you die. If one wills his entire estate to one person, his wife, obligate himself to pay her a sum of money greater than his total assets. In such a case, paragraph 2 in the obligation form should be omitted. If the will includes many persons, the obligation is made to the prime beneficiary or several beneficiaries. In this case, it's further stipulated the Torah heir carry out the terms of the will and other government laws. The obligation is null and void. The obligation becomes effective when the form below is executed and delivered to the beneficiary of any party. So what does it say? Again, I'll explain to you how it works. It's what's called, and again, we're going to get to this to explain it more detailed, shtar chatzi zachar, and a variation of the shtar chatzi zachar. But I know many of you are itching to understand this, so I want to tell you this, and then we're going to get back to the question of disinheritance. The way it works is basically the following. I have a daughter and I have a son. Halachically, the son should inherit 100% of my estate, but I want the daughter to inherit 50% of my estate. If all I have is a secular will and not a halachic will, when my daughter takes 50% of what rightfully should be my son's, she is stolen. She is a gazlan. She has stolen from my son. How do I arrange things so that she is not a thief and that she can get what I rightfully want her to get, which Rav Yaakov we saw endorsed, as do all gedolim, that in order to create and maintain harmony in our families, we should give everyone an equal portion. How do I achieve that? So it's what's called the shtar chatzi zachar, which essentially says the following. It says to the son, I hereby incur a debt to my daughter of $1 million. Let's say what I want to leave her is less than $1 million. I incur a debt to my daughter of $1 million, which that debt of what I owe her is forgiven if he agrees to split the estate with her. So essentially, if he refuses to split the estate, then he not only inherits 100% of my assets, but with it he inherits a debt which is bigger than the sum of my assets. So you create you make an offer that he can't accept. You make an offer that he has to refuse. So in other words, you leave a debt that is effective a moment before you die to the daughter or to the one who you want to inherit. And the halachic inheritors inherit that debt along with the assets. And the only way the debt is forgiven is if they will follow the terms of the will and how it stipulates to split the estate. So of course, by definition, the ones who inherit that debt are not going to choose to inherit the debt. They'll choose the other option, which is forgiving the debt in exchange for sharing the assets with the person to whom the debt was really left. So that's what's called the shtar chatzi zachar. It is an innovation of the Ramah. It dates back to the Ramah and earlier. And the Ramah writes that this was common practice in his time and practice in our time as well. And that is what's being incurred here. That is going to be the solution. You have this, if you have a will, but it's not a halachic will, all you need to do is fill this out and fulfill this kinyan sudur, lifting that handkerchief of that object of value, and that will turn your secular will into a halachic will. All you need is this addendum of the obligation, which is on either page 18 or 19. Insert that into your actual estate planning, into your will, and that will convert the secular will into a halachic will and make it halachically binding. So we'll come back to exactly that mechanism. But now let's just take another detour. Mishnah Baba Basra, source 43. Hakosev in the chasav l'achirim. V'iniach es bonav. You write your estate to others and you leave your children high and dry. Masha asa also, what you've done is valid. However, the rabbis are not very happy with you. So the Gemara Baba Basra says, if you give your assets to others and you leave nothing for your children, so before you die, once you die, you can't leave to others. That's what we've been spending our time now. We don't apply Dina de Machuzadina, and we don't apply Mitzvah Kaim Divrei Ames. When we're talking about moments before you die, you say, my children, forget about it. They never call, they never visit, they don't remember my birthday, our anniversary. Those no goodniks, I'm not leaving them anything. I'm giving all the money to the Boca Raton Synagogue Global Campaign. brsonline.org/global. Don't leave all your money to us. Give your children something, but don't give your children everything. Give us something too. So the Mishnah here says, if you give it all away to punish your children, so what could you do? It's a legitimate transfer of assets. And Masha Asa Asui, it's done is done. But Ein Ruach Chachamim Nocha Heimenu, the rabbis are not happy with you. In other words, you're violating the spirit of what the rabbis want. Now, if your children are not behaving properly and they're undeserving of those assets, then what you did is in fact the right thing. So the Mishnah here in Baba Basra quotes these two opinions, Tanakama and Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Shimon Gamliel qualifies the Tanakama and says, yeah, if your children are nice and have derech eretz and are on the derech and doing wonderfully in life, then it's wrong for you to gift all your assets before you die, leaving them high and dry with nothing. But if your children are not noag and kishura, which we're going to have to define now, what does it mean that your children are not living proper lives? Then, in fact, you're doing the right thing by disinheriting them and by gifting away all your assets before you die and not leaving it to them. The Gemara includes, Gemara source 44, my hava Allah, nu, what's the right thing? So tashma da'am alei shmuel rav Yehuda, shinina, sharp one, smart one. Lo tehavi be'abure achsanta. Don't be present where inheritance is transferred. Vafilu mibra bisha lebratava. Even from a bad son to a good son, koshike mibra lebarta. And certainly if it's shifted from a son to a daughter. So the Gemara seems to follow the first opinion. And it doesn't matter whether your children are behaving deservingly or not. It's wrong. Don't gift away all your assets, leaving your children with nothing, even if your children are seemingly unworthy. The Rashbam on Baba Basra, source 45, writes, what does it mean? Ein ruach chachamim nocha heimenu. Ein lo chachamim nachas ruach mimasav. The chachamim are not getting any nachas from you. You're not giving the rabbis nachas. You're not doing the right thing. Ela charon afgorim lahem. You're aggravating them. She koasim alav de ka'akar nachal adoraisa. You're circumventing the Torah's prescription for what should happen and to gift your assets and leave your children with nothing. And that makes the rabbis very unhappy, very dissatisfied. They're profoundly disturbed by somebody who follows this way. And the Sma quotes this Rashbam that you're entitled to. It's your money. You could gift it away and leave your children nothing, but it's not a nice thing to do. And more than not a nice thing to do, it is the wrong thing to do. What does the Shulchan Aruch say? Source 46. Shulchan Aruch says, in Chosh and Mishpat, Reish Pei Beis, if you gift away all your assets, leaving your children with gurnished, even if your children are themselves gurnished, it's not a nice thing to do, and the chachamim are not happy with you. Now others acquire what you gave them, it works. And even within one's, says the Shulchan Aruch, even within one's family, don't take it away from your bad son and give it to your good son, but follow the Torah prescription of leaving it to your sons equally, assuming one of them is not a Bechor, who should or would get a double portion. What about Reb Moshe says, well, if that's in fact what the Shulchan Aruch codifies, then how do you give tzedakah? Let's say a person before they die, or even in their will, we spoke about this earlier, we spoke about the virtue of this. What if you want to give tzedakah? So a person has assets worth whatever amount, and they want to leave 70-80% to their children, but 20-30%, they also want to have a legacy of giving, of impacting institutions and values and vision. So the Moshe wonders, "Be'inyan nesinal tzaka b'tzava im yesh b'za mishum avurei achsanasa." Avurei achsanasa was the expression of the Gemara. The Gemara said, "Shinana lo tehave be aburei achsanta." Aburei achsanta means transferring from the rightful recipient. So if you stipulate, or before you die, you gift part of your estate, your assets, to tzedakah, is giving it to tzedakah and thereby preventing your children from inheriting it, is that a violation of aburei achsanta, of not having it go to the rightful recipient? This is what Rav Moshe dealt with here in Eichu. And nishalti b'davar echad, sheish shlosh abonim, shnayim mehem einam shomrei Torah. So he has three sons, and two of them are not Torah observant. They're known to keep Shabbos. And these children are not educating the person's grandchildren with a Jewish education. And one of the granddaughters, Rachman al-Tzlan, intermarried. Something. that she even accepted the religion of the spouse. V'chelak kodam moso, rov nechasal tztaka, u'minas ha-ben ha-shem retoshim, mashkiach l'kiyem ha-tzava. So what do? He took the two-thirds that should have gone to those children who are now non-observant, and instead of giving it to those children, he gave the tztaka. And only the son, the one-third, the son who is observant, that son inherited. But the ones who are not observant did not. V'chelak l'chachem b'bon of $1,000, v'gam l'anachdem chelak ezesach b'tanayk sh'yusuf y'nitzun li'yudim, v'gam kol abonim y'mashirim ba'atzman ba'osha gadol sh'yitzorach l'am l'mosa yushim shaper avid. So first of all, these children are all very wealthy independently, and they don't need the father's money. So the father says, what am I going to give more money to my non-observant children and to their children, my grandchildren, who aren't getting a Jewish education and maybe even intermarry? Forget about it. I'm going to give it to tzedakah, and I'm going to give it to my one observant son. So that's the question. And I will leave a little money to them, but I'll make a condition. If you marry a Jew, you get this money. And I spoke to you about that in the first installment. I know somebody who said their grandchildren have to go on March of the Living. If they don't go on March of the Living, they don't inherit from the Zayda, from the grandfather. Whatever stipulation you have, they have to marry a Jew, they have to keep Shabbos, they have to, whatever the law and the halacha will allow you to condition, will allow you to stipulate. This was the question that was posed to Rav Moshe. If a person puts such stipulations and conditions within their will, are they violating what the Shulchan Aruch quoted was the opinion, following the opinion in the Mishnah that said, Avurei achsanata, you're not allowed to transfer from the rightful recipient children to somebody else. So does that mean if they're qualified? What about children who aren't observant? We'll go through this tshuva of Rav Moshe and others on this question of disinheritance. Disinheritance sounds very harsh, but the truth is disinheritance means that you are switching what the Torah prescribed as the hierarchy or the order of the inheritance. And many people do this. People who do their estate planning, in their estate planning, will say, my grandchildren get money only if they are halachically defined as Jewish, only if they marry a Jew, only if they have a PhD, only if they root for the Yankees, whatever you want to put in the will and estate. So is putting those conditions in, is that a violation of this Mishnah and this halacha? We'll pick up with this Rav Moshe next time, but for those who were eager to get to the end, which was the addition to the will to convert it to become a halachic will, at least you got that this time, and we'll pick up from here in Mitzvah Shem next time. Thank you very much.